What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
1 o'clock hour, the DDC, ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you today. Darren with the day off. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. So the Predators, we've had about 2 weeks to digest since the season ended. A few days to digest what David Poile and John Hines had to say. I weighed in at the end of the first hour a little bit, but kind of, Willie, reset for us what you and Elijah were getting into with this team and kind of what's next, and really the checklist outside of the obvious of re-signing Philip Forsberg.
Oh, boy, the re-signing Philip Forsberg. You know, the waiting game is going to be on as we move forward here. I was looking at some different things. There are some players that are about to go into the massive portion of their contract. Let's just take the Dallas Stars. Pretty interesting. They're changing up at the top. Rick Bonus, who took over for their coach, Montgomery, yep. Was his name? That
Jim Montgomery, right?
Jim Montgomery, I think, who had a problem off the ice, had to check himself in. Rick Bonus takes over, has success. They feel like that window with him at the helm is sort of closing. Jim Nill, the GM, is also under some heat. Rick Bonus steps down, but his contract was up, and I think it was a convenient way to say it's time to part ways. They've got a couple of superstars in the making that make the minimum right now. Jason Robertson and their goalie Jake Ottinger, who could not have been better in the playoffs. Those guys are about to get big raises. So there's some big, big questions for the Stars going forward. So there's a lot of things on the horizon here.
They have some free agents too, because I think.
Oh yeah, John Klingberg is probably the biggest one.
Yeah,
probably will not. Well, and Radulov, he's 36, 37. Yeah. Most people think he will go back to the KHL. He will not be back with the Stars. They can't afford him anyway, and he was not very productive. But there's always, as David Poile said in his press conference, everybody's always building and rebuilding. There's always difficult choices. If you go team by team and go to Spot Track or Cap Friendly, just pull up a team when you watch them and look at who's coming up, who's a restricted free agent, who gets a big raise, guys that were extended last year. I was looking at one the other day, and I can't remember who it was, a guy that made $1 or $2 million that next year the extension kicks in. Like Roman Josi, remember, he signed a big extension, so he was still making $4 million. And he went from $4 million to $9 million. Well, that changes your salary cap structure a lot. Carter Verhaeghe is a good one for Florida. I think, you know, he was making $1.1. He was a great find. Tampa simply had too many good players, and so he was available. Florida got him. He's become a really good player, and now he starts making a contract next year that's more like four-something million. So when you're looking at your budget – and you're the Predators, Philip Forsberg's going to be going from $6 million to X, 8, 9, whatever it's going to end up being. Or he's not going to be back, and you're going to have that much more cap space to go try to find other players, which is not plan A, as we know. But the overriding question, we're, you know, Elijah and I were kicking around, is as you watch the playoffs, how close could the Predators be with the right couple of changes to being in this mix where you could visualize them being able to survive in a playoff series, maybe advance. You look at the Rangers, what Shesterkin is doing for them. Could UC Saros do something like that for the Predators? I think the answer is yes. I think he's that type of goalie.
But I think they should watch his use. I mean,
Of course.
Like I think that, and it was interesting on the
– They didn't want to have to play him that many games.
Sure.
I think there were circumstances, starting with the fact that David Rittich never really instilled a lot of confidence with them. So that led to
yeah.
usage.
I mean, my honest answer to that question is right now, today, I don't think they're that close. But are they, if you re-sign Forsberg, if you sign or trade for a true second liner that, you know, or a second, first, top six guy that can score goals for you, and then you have two really good, solid lines in your top six, that obviously helps things. I mean, you got to upgrade at the forward position, you know, with goal scorers. That's just what you have to do. And Tomasino is going to have to continue to develop. I mean, I'm not necessarily giving up on Tolvanen, but I've put Tomasino ahead of him right now.
Tolvanen only makes 1.4 next year.
Yeah.
So I think the attitude with him is you're not penciling him in to be a second liner. You're penciling him in somewhere else, and he's going to have to prove it. He could play on your fourth line, and if he moves up, great. Or you could, you know, you could try something else there. You could move and clear some cap space, see what you could get for him.
I think you listen. I think you now. I don't know what exactly you get for him because the stock's not very high right now. But
and that's
I do
the
wonder,
risk you run.
I do wonder if you listen, if you know if you get a pick, some like a third round pick or something for him.
And I would put Luke Cunningham in the same category.
I would too.
Where.
In fact,
would you bring him back? Yeah, you could. Like, but I think at this point, to think that he's in your top six, you'd be reaching a lot. There's also Cody Glass, who I think is an NHL player, but also I think is it a reach to think he is going to blossom into a second line player?
Right. Like,
it's a reach.
Well, and now
it could happen, and that would be great. That would mean you would have more depth than you thought you had, which is awesome.
Sure.
But it's like we were talking about with the Titans wide receivers. The more chances, the more ingredients you have in the barrel, the more likelihood you end up with the right mix at some point with depth. So that's – but you also have to address the fact that, you know, right now you need a little bit more punch. You need a little bit more support in that top six. That's got to be addressed, and I think there's got to be a guy – on your defense core as well, that adds punch and depth to that group, size, strength, etc. And it's only going to make a Dante Fabro better. It's only going to make an Alex Carrier better. It's only going to support Roman Josi and Mattias Ekholm better. So there's limited resources, but I think there's enough flexibility that they've
sure.
built with cap space, even if with Philip Forsberg still in the mix. To address a couple of holes there.
Yeah, but
you're not going to have six new players. You don't have enough.
But you
could have the right two or three that I think could close that gap and make you feel a lot better about your overall team depth.
And you have to find the balance of not sitting around and waiting and hoping that Tolvanen and Glass, that they're going to develop
yeah.
and become more than what they are. Because right now they are what they are. They could be good depth pieces. But
they're cheap. That's the thing. You can keep them around because they're not taking up that much cap space.
Sure, but they're taking up a roster spot. So
right.
So that's the if you're going to sit around and like be content because they're cheap, then you have to understand that you're going to get what you're going to get. You get what you pay for, essentially.
Yeah.
If you want to try and close the gap sooner and jump into being a contender sooner, then you're going to have to spend. I mean, that's just the name of the game, and David knows that. He said, you know, last week that he has the go-ahead to spend at the cap if it makes sense, and he didn't think it made sense last year. I'm curious of this offseason, and the free agent pool is not super deep, but I think there are some good players out there. Obviously, the trade market is one he's worked before that he could potentially make something happen. But, you know, to what what's the expense there? I mean, do you – because you can get into the business of having to rob Peter to pay Paul. If somebody comes along and says, you know, hey, we're going to offer you an upgrade on defense and a second line winger, but you know, we want Fabro or we want a prospect in return. Are you willing to do that?
I think that's
the question.
I think the good thing is because they didn't bite and trade. For example, we mentioned Cale Yarncroke some during the season. Would it be nice to have brought him back to bolster it, add another veteran? Yes, but you saw the Flames traded 3 draft picks to get him. And they still may not win. Who knows? But they and then you couple that with what they traded to get Tyler Toffoli, who was not a rental. Kyle Yonker was a rental that you paid 3 draft picks to get. Toffoli cost them a lot, but at least you have him for another couple years. But you see what I'm saying? Nashville didn't do that. So they have most of their draft picks. They traded the second rounder to get Lausanne, but they've got their first round pick for the next several years. They've got the picks they acquired for different players. They've got, they didn't trade top prospects, right? Which, so steadily they get more prospects in the pool that are NHL players in the making, which is a good thing. So they have some different things. If they wanted to make a bold move and trade somebody in on their NHL roster to get somebody else, they could do that, and they have a better idea of what they have behind it.
Well, maybe you get lucky and you get a team that is willing to pay a second for a Cunning or a Tolvanen. Then you get your second round pick back.
I don't know. I don't know if he'd be lucky. I think Luke Cunning could easily bounce back and score 20 goals next year.
Right. So that's where, you know, you play hardball and you say, hey, I'll give him up for a second round pick.
You might have
take that all day long.
You might have to take a fourth round pick. But maybe the fourth round pick turns into something.
Sure.
But you take that roster spot, as you mentioned, and bring in somebody different. There's a lot of different options you have, some creativity that's going to be involved, and you got to be a little lucky.
No, I agree. But, you know, you started this with Dallas. I think everybody that's kind of talked about that should they go into a rebuild, I mean, Dallas, I think, is about to do that to an extent. Now, they're going to take a step back because they basically have. I think, you know, last year they had injuries, and this year they made the playoffs and gave it a good fight. But they need to do some tweaking there to that roster.
They do, but they have a really good goalie.
Yep.
Who they're going to have to pay. They have Robertson and Hintz, who are now
two-thirds
of an excellent top line.
3-1, something like that.
You have Joe Pavelski, who is very old but still a really good player. And then here's what the challenge is. You've got Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin that both make over $9 million a year for the next several years. You got to deal with having those two guys because they're not going anywhere.
Do you think they try to move one?
Who's going to take them? Would you trade for them?
No.
No. They're not worth that.
No. Nope.
So that's what you're facing.
Unless you're Seattle. You got the room.
Seattle's already decided they're not doing that. Now, Seattle could be very much in the game for making some plays and trying to, you know, maybe they didn't like what they did last year. I don't know how quickly they want to jump in, or do they want to continue with the long game and just, you know, develop talent, go old-fashioned, and just build through the system.
It was a tough weekend for Vanderbilt baseball, and Tim Corbin obviously had some words this morning about that. We'll discuss as you listen to the DDC on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Elijah Campbell here with you today. So not a good weekend, Billy, for your Commodores, for our Commodores, as they're in a position to clinch a spot to host the regional, and Tigers LSU score 18 runs in the final 4 innings to beat them in the finale at the Hawk. Just a tough way to end the regular season. Tim Corbin, obviously not happy, did not do a postgame presser, which I'm just going to be honest with you. I disagree with that. And Corbs is, you know, I think we have a good enough relationship with Corbs that, you know, I can say that and he gets it. And I know he spoke today and was passionate and still upset about how things went. But, you know, I kind of think that's one of those you just, it sucks and it's a tough situation to be in and you just got to do it. But we know what kind of individual Tim Corbin is, so I'm not going to sit here and question that one bit. But I didn't agree with that decision at the time. And but a tough way to end the regular season. And, you know, this is just a team with some growing pains as they go into the postseason. And a tough way to end.
It really looked like they were making some good progress heading into this past weekend against LSU. You're playing at home. LSU is a very good team. But like a lot of the top teams in the league, they just beat each other up. you know, pick a weekend. I think the week before, if I'm not mistaken, Ole Miss swept LSU. Ole Miss earlier in the season got completely embarrassed and wiped out by Tennessee three straight. Of course, a lot of teams that happened to them. You know, Vanderbilt had struggled some, and then they had put together excellent back-to-back weekend series at Georgia, at Arkansas, won 4 out of 6. And then they got beat soundly in all three games. The third game was really tough because the first two, LSU just basically beat them for 9 innings. On Saturday, Vanderbilt led 6-0 early, still led 8-4 in the seventh inning, and by the end of the day, they had given up 21 runs.
Yeah.
And that is something that's happening more in college baseball. There's been some offensive eruptions, if you will, across the country. Run scoring is up. So Tim Corbin was very frustrated because of just how much things got away late in that game. That was a real tough loss because I think even had they won that game, they still, I think, would have been in the conversation for a regional host. And as it is now, I don't know that they're eliminated from. They're still number 5 in the RPI. That's an interesting profile they have right now as far as whether they're going to be a 1 or a 2. They have the number 1 strength of schedule in the country. They've played more games against the top 25 than anybody. But the problem is they're 7-15 against the top 25. For whatever reason, they just have not been able to have the consistent pitching that they've been known for. I think they knew going in that they didn't have the established ace like Kamar Rocker or Jack Leiter or Sonny Gray that they usually have. You know, even a guy like Drake Fellows, who's not pitching in the big leagues yet, but he was one of those guys you could count on every week to give you a good start. They just haven't had that kind of consistency in their starting pitchers, which creates issues over the course of the weekend. They haven't been able to clearly define roles. There's some pitchers that haven't taken a big step from last year to this year. There have been some freshmen who have had great moments, but they're also freshmen. And then there's Christian Little, who is a unique case in a day and age where college baseball, the players are getting a lot older. Because of COVID and different reasons, the transfers, they hang around, and that's a way to win, is you stockpile older talent, 22, 23 years old. Christian Little was the polar opposite. He came in early as a guy that was a high school senior age last year, but an immense talent. But even a year later, he's still the youngest player on the team, and he's playing against guys in a lot of cases 3, 4, 5 years older than he is. And, you know, for example, he got the start on Friday, struggled a little bit with his command. He got exposed, and they were behind the eight ball from the start. So there's a lot of things going on right now. Tim Corbin had sort of an emotional reaction this morning, saying, because I care, you know, go ahead and read what he said.
So he declined to speak with reporters, went straight to his office after the game yesterday, and then got on a Zoom this morning. And he said that, you know, the players can regroup quicker than the coach. He said, I'm mentally touched. I probably should be in a medical institute. This blank means a lot to me. I'm an emotional guy. I don't care. It's what I do. I've spent 38 years doing this. And the day that I don't give a blank is the day that I won't be in this chair. And nobody questions that with him. I would never question that with Tim Corbin and how much he cares about, you know, this team, that university, you know, the sport of baseball and what he's done. But, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him this type of emotional because, you know, in the last several years, they haven't been in this position before. So it is interesting. And like I said, I disagree with him not speaking to reporters after the game. He's the head coach. You know, good on the players that did speak. But, you know, I know Spencer Jones was one that talked to the media, you know, but
who he hit about 1,000 feet of home runs.
Yeah.
In that game. I mean, that's what's crazy. You look at the final score and it got so bad late.
Right.
But there were a couple of plays in that game. Spencer Jones hit the home run over the batter's eye in center field. They're, like I said, they were up 7-4. 8-4. Sorry, 8-4 after Spencer Jones hits the home run. Two outs in the seventh inning. Two on. Bring in the left-hander. Berkwich, I think is his name, to face a lefty. Two balls, two strikes, hung a slider, balls hit out of the ballpark. Enrique Bradfield almost caught it, made a spectacular effort for it, but it's a home run, so it's 8-7. Didn't close the inning. Then in the next inning, Vanderbilt's get a run on the board, 9-7. They have the lead. Bases loaded, one out. Enrique Bradfield at the plate. Now, what do you think the chances are that he hits him in double play? Fastest guy in college baseball. Most electrifying guy. He hits a comebacker. 1-2-3 double play. And it stays 9-7.
Sure.
So that's – it's just everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. So I'm not excusing Tim Corbin. But we do know that there is a very intense competitor back there. He doesn't always – you know, he's not a demonstrative guy. You're not going to see him go Tony Vitello and start yelling and screaming on the field. But he's got an intensity that I think he just made the decision, look, I'm not going to look very good if I do the media now. I'm not excusing what he did. I think you got to try to do it. But I'm going to give him a pass because he doesn't do it very often. It's, you know, he's been there since 2003. How many times has he done that?
Yeah.
Twice?
Right. And if he had come out and said, and even said, like, we played like blank or, you know, whatever you want to say. He comes out and says that and then says, I'm not going to take any questions and walks off. Like,
right.
Okay,
fine. Peter Laviolette
right.
kind of thing.
Like, yeah. I get it. Like, I would have appreciated that more than making the players do it and him not. And then he does it this morning. And, again, like, he has – and I think he owned up to that. I mean, he admitted why. He's like, he even said, quote, I love being here every day. I have a lot of gratitude towards being at Vanderbilt. I love that the players care, and I love that they can bounce back. And I bounce back too, but yeah, I'm emotional about things, and I would rather be that way than be dead. And the day that I'm not, I'll probably be underneath. So I'm just going to keep going this way, end quote. And that's Corbs. That's a very Corbs type answer.
That's some self-evaluation there, and there's no doubt about it. You know, everybody appreciates everything that he's been about for a long, long time. I'm more curious about how they respond as a team after what happened over the weekend, because that was tough, right? Especially even if you just get that last game, you're feeling much better about your overall profile for the season. But that was a bitter pill to have to bounce back, because now you have a one game got a win to stay alive in Birmingham and Hoover against Ole Miss, who's a good team. But you lose that game, now you got to sit and wait, see what happens over the entire weekend. And if you win, then you got to play Tennessee. That's no picnic.
No.
Now, how much can they improve their stock between now and over the weekend? I don't know. There's a lot of people that believe that they more or less have the host sites pretty much not. They don't want your whole season to come down to how you do in the conference tournaments, which frustrates me a little bit. I feel like that should be a big part of it too. I think
so.
Who
right now will host
in the league?
Yeah, Tennessee.
No question, Tennessee. Auburn. No question. Arkansas. No question. Yeah. I'm just looking down here. LSU probably nailed it down by winning those three in Nashville. There's a few others, and this is what I'm most curious about. You know, Georgia's another one that's going to be interesting, going to be right on the borderline. Texas A&M, there's a bunch. But if you look at the middle of the SEC, there's a lot of teams that had high expectations that are right around 500, give or take a game or two. They're all really, really good teams. And I think you're going to find, once the tournament starts and they get out of their, you know, beating up on each other in league play, you're going to see that there's some pretty good baseball teams there.
Sure.
And that's, I think, the key for Tim Corbin is to even if they don't host, go on the road and know, you know, you've played the most difficult schedule in the country. But and that's going to help you be battle-tested to be able to compete in the tournament.
The SEC tournament could help them.
In theory.
Right.
But I don't know if the committee really is going to change. Now, look, if you beat Tennessee.
Sure, you win the SEC, then, I mean, I think that might change something.
I would hope so. Yeah. If they're just ignoring that, then they're not doing their job.
Sure.
But we've seen the you know, they have to try to lay some of this stuff out. They've got to let the host sites know that they've got the bid.
Right.
Right? So how many are really movable by this time? I would hope that they keep some flexibility there, but there's some logistics, right? It's not like the NCAA basketball tournament where the sites know that they're going to take whoever they say, but they've got to take all the bids, who's put a bid up, where are we sending these teams? It's a little more complicated for baseball.
The DDC presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at springhillac.com. More of the DDC next. ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We've had a fun show today as we continue to move towards 2 o'clock. We have had a couple people on our phone text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com that have referred to Morgana the Kissing Bandit, who I remember very well. We had fun earlier today when we did This Is What I Know. I asked the historical significance for the woman who showed some great athleticism sprinting across the field at the Nashville SC game during the delay, only to be tackled with beautiful form tackling precision by the security guy. And I asked, was that a first? And some people have brought up Morgana. I put Morgana in a separate category because she was definitely never tackled. She definitely had the bit. If you look for the story of Morgana the Kissing Bandit, great stuff. You know, she was, to put it quickly in a 15-second, for people who have no idea what I'm talking about, she used to run out of the stands and kiss a baseball player. Nolan Ryan, George Brett, you know, the superstars she would target. And I think it was kind of a promotional thing. They would sort of let her do that. You know, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, who's coming out of the stands? Everybody knew who it was. She was a character. So I put that in a slightly different category, but I do appreciate the reference that some of our listeners had in mind when I said, was that the first? Definitely she was not the first woman to run on the field, but I do wonder how many women have hit the speed that woman hit and then been tackled as
right
as forcefully.
I don't know. Could have been the first.
Yeah, and we asked the question, was it worth it? Mm. And will she get 15 minutes of fame because
of
that?
How's she feeling?
What was at stake, too?
I would like, if this person or somebody that was with her is listening, I would love for them to call in. Because I would love to know.
Does anybody have info? Yeah, I would love to know more.
737-1025.
Is she sitting in a jail cell right now, or is she paying a fine?
She's probably out.
Is she washing dishes?
Did she clear concussion protocol?
Did she clear concussion? These are all valid questions. All valid questions.
Very good question.
I have another question for you, Chase.
Okay.
When I throw out the names of Nazem Kadri and Milan Lucic, what comes to mind for you?
They both are physical players.
With
some history.
With some history. With that in the backdrop, there were two interesting interactions with the goalie over the weekend that caused a lot of stir in the NHL playoffs, and I can only imagine what that would have been like if the Predators were involved in one of the series, because it created a lot of stir.
Sure.
So let's take them one by one. Kadri, who has been suspended each of the last two seasons during the playoffs, and it ended his season and his team's season. His team's year ended with him on the suspended list. So he is number one guy in terms of trying to change his reputation. Early in game three, his team is down 1-0. There's a loose puck in front of the net, up for grabs. He goes in hard along with Callie Rosen, a defenseman for St. Louis. They engage on the puck, and they both go flying into Jordan Binnington. Jordan Binnington gets hurt. He's out. He has to come out of the game, and he is out for the playoffs. There was no penalty called on the play.
Is he out for the series or the whole playoffs?
He is out for the playoffs. I think that's what I read. Yeah. He's definitely out for the series. So, the question is, what do you do? If it weren't Nazem Kadri, would you even be really raising a stink? Craig Berube, after the game, head coach of the Blues. Look at his reputation.
Right.
That's all I'm going to say on that. Of course, it was against his Blues team last year that the second suspension happened. He took out, and it was a cheap shot. He took out Justin Falk, a defenseman. And so that is still stuck in the craw of a lot of the Blues fans. So now the Blues are sitting there going, we just lost our goalie that's been red hot, giving us a chance as the underdog in this series. Ville Husso is a good goalie who was actually the starter to begin the playoffs, but kind of sagged a little bit. Binnington looked like he was really giving them a lift. He's out. They're furious at Kadri. Now let's flip to the other side of the perspective. Colorado, Jared Bednar, the head coach, what does he say? Forget about the reputation. Either the play is legal or it's illegal. That play was legal. So who cares what the history of a player is? We're not talking. Yeah. It's not relevant here.
He's saying because.
So which side do you buy? Like, we're neutral. I don't care one way or the other whether the Blues win or Colorado wins. These are two rivals of the Predators.
Yeah. Well.
So what did you see on that play?
I'll combine the two because you mentioned Milan Lucic.
Okay, I'm going to get to that one. That's
because Milan Lucic runs into Mike Smith.
Right. Now, that was a different set of circumstances because they're down 4-0.
Yep.
They're trying to send a message, et cetera, and who better to deliver the message
than Milan Lucic? But because his observation is that the goalie was out of the blue paint. He had gone behind the net to play the puck. That's the age-old question. Does that mean the goalie's fair game?
He's not fair game.
At that point. But he acted like he was. I think the Lucic play is more egregious than the Kadri play. I think Kadri is getting punished because of his reputation, which...
And he's really not getting punished. I don't think there's any fallout.
But he's getting from, people are giving their opinion
on
him.
In fact, he got a lot of...
He got a water bottle thrown at him. I mean...
By Binnington.
Oh, yeah. So I kind of think that play was a hard hockey play, and unfortunately Binnington was in the crossfire because he was in the net, and it's an unfortunate situation. I didn't think it was an egregious play. I think he and Rosen, and he even said that if Rosen isn't there going after the puck, I let up, and it probably doesn't happen. But because they were both going after the puck and trying to play it, they got tripped up, and they go flying into Binnington.
And I think
– I don't think it's egregious. Because
it's not – it's definitely not egregious. The question is, how much do you have to sort of have caution – when you're in there. That puck, though, is available. It's not in the blue ice. It's out there. I see what he was trying to do there. So I tend to side with the Avs on that. It's a very unfortunate situation there. Now, could he have let up a little bit more and said, well, I got to watch out for the goalie here? He could. But it's the playoffs.
Yeah,
you're sort of throwing caution to the wind a little bit here. The Lucic thing is a little more of a calculated situation. The puck's behind the net. They're down 4-0, in my mind.
And he blindsided him. Like, if you watch the play, Smith had no idea he was there. He turns up and bam.
He comes from way out.
Oh, yeah.
And
he made a beeline for him.
I think he knows, look, I'm throwing caution to the wind a little bit here. I think he has a little more time than Kadri does to say, you know what? I'm gonna try to stir it up here. He definitely, in his defense, Lucic, on the play behind the net, could have gone in a lot harder. He was called for, quote, charging. He got a 5-minute major, and he got a game.
Well, I mean, it was a charging. That was a charge.
Well, he charged, but he also could have gone 100 times harder. If he follows through, he could have hit him a ton harder. He sort of pulls up and hits him a little bit and then sort of follows through, falls on top of him. So I thought that was a really interesting thing.
He got a shoulder in there. I mean, because he sped around the defender.
He easily could have avoided that.
He sped around the defender. I'm watching it again right now, and he throws a shoulder in and knocks him down.
But if you notice, there's snow coming up. Like, he's decelerating.
Sure, but he's still like, I think
he knew what he was doing.
He knew what he was doing. So I think the punishment fits the crime.
Yes,
I agree with the 5-minute major.
Supplementary discipline for either one? I'd say probably not.
Kadri should get nothing.
You think Lucic the game? You think
he might get a game?
You think so?
He might get
even
a game.
Though he got the gate.
He did, but he might get okay. a game.
I think that's an interesting.
What do you? I mean, you
debate.
Think he should or no?
Kadri,
no.
Kadri definitely not.
It was a legal play.
But that won't stop the Blues fans from giving him the business tonight in game four, which is going to be a great game.
It will
Lucic,
be.
Lucic, I think in the time and score, there's just no reason for him to hit the goalie. There's no reason. He's just trying to get things going. But he also, I think, realized part of him is that, you know what, I can't crush the guy. I can't do it. So he sort of went in between. So I think the punishment, they did the right thing of controlling the game by giving him 5 minutes. They actually went back and looked. They gave 5 minutes so that they could double check and look at the monitor, which was smart officiating, upheld it. I have no problem with that. So it's supplementary discipline on top of that. I say no.
Okay.
But I wouldn't surprise me if he got a game.
And that's where reputation comes in.
Reputation, you know? That's the sort of the theme of the segment, is the reputation of the two players in conversation here plays a big part of it.
There you go. We will, on the other side, come back and wrap things up on the DDC this Monday edition, ESPN 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Stillman and Company coming up in just a few minutes with Jared and Caroline. Is it going to be a holdout with Derrick Henry? Is he going to show up tomorrow? That's what they're going to be talking about coming up in just a few minutes. But, Willie, we've been depressing ourselves because during our show today, we've had the TV on in the NFL Network, and they have been showing the Tennessee Titans and the Cincinnati Bengals. And going back, like, even though obviously we're not sitting here watching every play, but we obviously know the key plays in that game, seeing it for the second time, because this is the – I haven't watched that game since it actually happened. It just irritates you even more because you see the opportunities that were there for the Titans that they just didn't capitalize on. The mistakes that they forced Cincinnati to make, but the fact that those three picks just doomed the Titans.
You know, I think you could do a really interesting documentary of some of the home playoff losses that the franchise has had since the beginning, since the stadium opened. Of course, you know, you had the Music City Miracle and the great run. That was the only home game that year, was the Music City Miracle. But from then on, if you look at the home losses, the two to the Ravens in particular, in 2000 and then 2008, not so much 2020 to the Ravens. I think, you know, there wasn't anything freaky in that game. They just weren't quite good enough. They had chances, just lost a close game.
No, but, well, yeah.
But last year in
but
particular.
But there was a death knell pick in that game. I mean, they still had a chance at the end of the game. And he threw a pick.
Absolutely. But not as many things. I think if you look at this Bengals game, which we are, and it kind of reminds me, remember we had a fun moment on the show years ago. We got Derek Mason to go back and watch the 2000 game. And there's some things he hadn't thought about in a long time, and he got real frustrated and had to turn it off. I think it's just interesting to go back and watch this. It's been right in front of us. But, for example, two plays in the first half. Okay, they're not even done showing the first half.
Yeah.
Okay, right now Cincinnati's up 9-6. In the aftermath of going for two, not getting it, and then Cincinnati comes back and kicks a 54-yarder to go up 9-6. So, you know, that kid, McManus is his name, the kicker?
McPherson.
Absolutely perfect on the day with some difficult kicks. Awesome job.
I mean, this first play could have been A.J. runs the wrong route.
Oh, when you watch it, you'll list a ton of things. But I'm just going to give you two examples because we have limited time here. that you may have almost stopped thinking about since then. It'll jar your memory. But then as 5 years go by, 10 years go by, you might completely purge this from your memory. But the Jackrabbit Jenkins pick that wasn't.
Oh, yep.
I mean, when you look at the play, all he's got to do is catch the ball. Even if he stumbles for a second, he's probably still going to score. Just that play alone, think about what that could have done. What that could have meant if he just catches the ball and scores when he picks that ball off at about, what, the 15 or the 20-yard line somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
There?
I mean, I think he was in. I think he probably would have taken it to the house where he was.
It would have been really hard for anybody to tackle him because he had his momentum going as he has a chance to catch that ball. It was not a tough pick, right? It's a should have caught it. There's another one that's not as obvious, but the Titans are down, I want to say, either 3-0 or 6-0. They've got the ball. They're trying to get things going. They've moved it down into Bengals territory. They've got 2nd and 11 on somewhere like the 40, 42-yard line. They've crossed midfield. They've got a wide-open Kari Blassen game in the flat. Wide open.
Yep.
And he drops the ball. So instead of a first down catch where he's going to easily get the first down and he might get close to the red zone. But let's just say he gets to the 25. 1st and 10 at the 25, but he drops it, and instead it's 3rd and 11, and they throw an incomplete pass on the next play, and they punt. There's so many plays that could have swung the game. And despite all of these things that we're talking about, they still have a chance to win at the end. So if like one or two, and that's the frustration about that, and then the two Ravens games that I referenced, 2000 and 2008, where so many things went wrong in one game that were uncharacteristic of the team in the regular season. That's the stinging part.
Yep, and it's going to sting until...
forever.
Yeah, I mean, now...
It'll sting less when they ever win it, right? It's like the sure. Red Sox. The Red Sox had movies and documentaries and books
legs.
Written, and then all of a sudden when they won it in 2004, it didn't sting as
right.
bad.
You still bring it up.
And now they've won it 3 times. Oh, yeah, it's still a big part of the history. Same thing with the Cubs, right? Steve Bartman and all that. It doesn't – now you could go back and almost – it's a badge of honor. But at the time, it was – you can't get around it.
Right. Well.
So hopefully, the next chapter will be better.
We're going to find out that the process continues tomorrow with OTAs, Phase 3, as they call it. And the question is, will Derrick Henry – be there tomorrow. Stillman and Company coming up next. They're going to talk about that because I think it's interesting. Should we be worried if he's not? They'll discuss that as you continue to listen to ESPN 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.